In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about how to recover from coding for months without talking to customers. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 347. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
Well, I am back from Sweden. I had a great time attending and speaking at Brennan Dunn's Double Your Freelancing Conference in Europe. He said it was going to be the last conference, the last DYF conference he throws, and that he's going to only do small retreats after this. So it was cool to meet up with him and his crew. And then I spent a couple days with Sherry in Stockholm. We had left the kids at home, and we had a great time kind of seeing the sights, painting the town red, and I got a good amount of work done. You know, it's crazy when you're in a new environment, and you know that I was basically taking the days off, you know, quote-unquote vacation days, but there was still stuff going on back here, back in the office, so a couple hours a day, 90 minutes or so, I could just hammer out a ton of email and Slack replies, and actually had some really good ideas because I had the headspace to think about stuff, so I noted them down, and I'm starting to put those in the queue right now, so it was actually a productive, I wouldn't even say it goes far as to say it was a workation. It was more like a light vacation with a bit of work sprinkled in, and that's kind of, to be honest, my ideal thing, because I think when I don't work for like a week, I feel disconnected, and I kind of get bored just traveling and being in places without having something to occupy my mind.
I would imagine that's a lot like retirement as well. Like, I'm not one who just likes to take extended vacations just for exactly that reason. I find myself getting bored.
Yep. And I think that's where having, you know, hobbies like, you know, I do investing, which is fun, but I can only do so much of that in the day and think about it for so long before I need to do the next thing. And so it was nice to have a mix of, you know, after the conference was done, we would like go see one site and then we'd go to lunch. And then she and I would come back in the afternoon, which is when kind of this time zone was waking up. And Sherry had a few calls and she was still, you know, doing quite a bit of consulting and stuff. So it was good. It was a nice mix. I really, really kind of enjoy that stuff. I also enjoy getting away for retreats. I mean, like we've talked about in the past, you know, taking a full 2-3 days, but like 7 complete days for me without thinking at all about the things I'm most passionate about, which is a lot of what I work on, is always a, you know, kind of a hard stretch.
Cool. Well, on my end, I finally got the 2-step sign-up process for Bluetick all squared away. There's definitely edge cases in there that I just kind of said, look, I'll deal with this later. Instead of making the whole thing bulletproof, I made it basically just work. And I know that there's going to be cases where something's going to come up and somebody goes to sign up and it's going to break. And I'm just going to have to figure it out at that point because I don't really have the time to try and capture every single edge case. And right now, it's just going to show some sort of generic messages if it goes sideways in certain ways that I just don't know about because I don't know all the different ways that Stripe, for example, could say, hey, this card isn't going to work. So I got that all squared away, and I finally got started working on the marketing and sales website. So I got a pricing page all set, and now I'm working on the tour, and I got to create a couple of videos to add in there. I'll probably put one on the homepage, then I'm working on fleshing out the rest of the tour and figuring out whether I want to do just one page for the tour or I want to divide it up into several of them based on what different situations people are in. So I've got a bunch of different notes that I've aggregated from various customer discussions that I've had and different things that they've either keyed on or asked about during demos and putting those into specific places in the tour and trying to essentially walk somebody through the decision-making process for it.
Good for you, man. That's exciting. I know it took a lot longer than you wanted to, but it's got to feel good to kind of have that behind you and be able to pull the next thing off the list.
It is. The thing I don't like about doing the stuff on the tour side of things is that, like, it's a completely blank slate, and I'm not a designer. So I'm sitting there going through and trying to figure out, like, should the page be laid out, and what should I say in certain areas, and how should one thing lead into another? And for whatever reason, it's really hard for me to do that. Like, I can conceptualize what I need to say, but kind of doing the layout for it, it's, I don't know. That's the part I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, that is hard. I haven't done that in years, and when I used to do it. I wasn't very good at it. It's like such detailed work. It's tough. I mean, that's what you got to do when you're scrappy and bootstrapped and you're counting the days until you can hire
a designer,
hire some help, you know, get a contract. Yeah, even if it's a contractor, it's like somebody to, because they're so much faster at it and the end product will look better too. So it's like, ugh, but you gotta, this time when you gotta be super scrappy. So I get it.
Yeah. Plus it's all in WordPress. So like there's only so much that you can do, or at least so much that I can do in WordPress. So yeah, I'm just going to kind of make do with what I've got. And then after that, just kind of look for a designer at some point down the road when I actually have the funds for it.
And so for me, my other point of update is, you know, we've had some recent questions on the podcast about a book or books or resources to learn how to build a SaaS app. And someone had pointed out the PHP Spark framework, which I think is pretty cool. There's another one in the works now. It's Marcus Wein. He's in Austria and he's working on a SaaS guidebook for Ruby on Rails. And I actually met him at Brennan's conference and we kind of were talking about stuff and then he kind of cooked up this idea and put up a landing page while we were there. So I thought that was kind of cool. So he's getting to work on that book. And the URL for that is sasrailsbook.com. So if you're interested in, you know, in kind of the fundamentals of how to build a SaaS app and are willing to either learn Rails to do it, or you already know Rails and you want to just learn how, you know, a guy who's built dozens and dozens of them would architect it and then all the things that he would think about, I would head to sasrailsbook.com. What are we chatting about today?
Well, today we're going to be diving into a problem that a listener had sent into us. And his name's Zach, and he has a product called neverlate.io. And he's started working on it. And he spent about 3 months working on it and has a basic MVP all set up. But he fully admits that he made this classic mistake where he spent several months in his basement working on it and has come out of it. And now he's ready to try and find customers. But he has no customers to go to or to show it to because he spent all that time working on the product itself rather than doing any customer development. So he's tried a couple of different things to generate some traffic. He's tried some AdWords. He's talked to a few different people, but really he's kind of at ground zero at this point. And he's wondering, what do I do here? What do I do to try and move this forward and make it work?
And so the URL again is neverlate.io. And it is an appointment reminder service. And right now it is very horizontal. It doesn't say appointment reminders for XYZ niche. It's just a broad appointment calendar, plus it can send automated text messages. And I guess that's it. It doesn't look like it makes phone calls either. So anyways, I'm just kind of looking at the homepage. Obviously, I haven't used the app, just kind of trying to give the listener an idea of the business. And it starts at $29 a month for up to 200 appointments a month. And then it has a $50, an $80, and a $500 tier.
So this reminds me a lot of Patrick McKenzie's appointment reminder app. And maybe that's where the idea came from. But to give a little bit more details on this, I had gone back and forth with him just to kind of ask a couple more detailed questions. And when he came back, he basically told me like the product is functional, but he doesn't have a customer list. He doesn't have a channel where he can start to do customer development. As you said, the bottom price point is $29 a month. And in terms of his target market, he's a little bit unclear on where to go with that. He knows certain ones that he's probably going to skip. So he's inclined to skip massage therapists, for example, because he doesn't think that they're going to be willing to pay more than like $10 a month. And then in terms of signups, he's gotten some from AdWords. As he spent about $50 or so in AdWords, and he is getting people to sign up for trials, but it's not a lot. And obviously AdWords can get very expensive. In terms of lifetime value, he really doesn't know yet. He's thinking maybe a year or so of service, so around $350 for the lifetime value of a customer. And his base question is really just, what do I do at this point? Should I spend more money on AdWords? Should I do something else? Like what are my options and what are your recommendations about where to go with this?
And, you know, we have an outline here, but to kick us off, that you're in a real tough place because you basically have no customers, no list, and you have a me too product. There's nothing that differentiates this product that I can see from, I won't say a slew of others, but I bet if I searched, I could find a half dozen other apps that do exactly what this does. So definitely back against the wall at the present.
And I think that's probably a situation that a handful of listeners have found themselves in over the years, probably more than a small handful, where you've built something and you get to a point where you're like, okay, yeah, I'm ready to take this to people and show it to them because I'm no longer embarrassed about what it is or what it looks like. But you haven't gotten far enough down the customer development road to figure out like who it is that you're going to talk to. So I think in this case, really, your first priority is to prove one way or another whether or not this idea is going to be viable for you to execute on. And I'll put proven air quotes because you're really never going to be 100% sure that it's going to work. But you can get an idea of it. You can start looking down the road and you start doing that customer development and try and figure out, does this look like it has legs, or am I just wasting my time and money trying to get this to work? So along that lines, I think the first thing to do is really set a timeline. And for something like this, it seems like a 6-month timeline is probably an appropriate timeline to set for this. So especially if you're working on it on the side, if you were working on it full time, probably less since you have a fully functional MVP, take that timeline, set it aside and say, okay, I'm going to do X things during this time and set goals for that entire timeline. So the first goals that I was thinking that you would set up for 6 months, months 1 and 2 should really just be focused on trying to get a certain number of customer discussions, whether that's 5 per month or 5 per week. Really, you can set your own pace and schedule at that, but you're trying to figure out, can I reach these people and how do I reach them? And once you start having those discussions with them, you learn more about who they are, what they do, how much time they spend in different areas, especially trying to solve this particular problem, whether it's something that they're willing to pay for. And once you have that information, you ask yourself, well, how much are they willing to pay? And obviously you'd ask them as well, but you want to find out, are they willing to pay for it? How much? And listen to the language that they're using. And really, these first 2 months are just spent doing these customer discussions. Yes, if you can get them to a trial or onto a paid account, that's great. But that's not your goal here. Your focus should be getting a certain number of customer discussions, because that's going to give you an idea of how easy or difficult it is to continue doing that down the road.
Right. And if you can't get into these customer discussions, which are really about learning, as you've just said, or rather than trying to build revenue, if you can't find anyone who's willing to talk to you, that's a very, very bad sign. It's a sign that you've built something that people just don't care about, don't need, don't want, which is, you know, going to be a something you could very well run into with any product that you launch. And at that point, you have to decide, am I willing to essentially continue to add things to this that actually make it unique, so that I'm the only app that does this in this way, or to pick a niche and niche down. And so just make it, like you said, you don't want to do massage therapists, and I don't blame you. Is there a group? Is it medical or dental, because they have HIPAA, so they're really expensive, and so they're the $500 a month and up, and you offer only HIPAA compliant, so it's appointment reminders for medical and dentist office. There's probably some others in that. This is where it's you have to do this research. I don't see this is not the time to run Facebook ads to a landing page and see who converts and, you know, kind of play it that way. This is an app where appointments are brick and mortar type things. I can't think of an online audience, you know, like, again, like designers or photographers or, you know, developers or entrepreneurs, or, you know, there's certain audiences that are just online a lot. Appointment reminder, if you can figure out a way to target an online audience, great. But if not, then you have to go through these much more manual steps. This is, in my opinion, I don't really see an angle here where you're just going to run some Facebook ads and, you know, convert people to trial and split test your way out of this, especially these first, for the whole 6 months you're going to be learning, but these first 2 months are going to be critical. And they're going to, like Mike said, tell you whether or not you should continue.
And along with that, like in these first 2 months, you're trying to figure out who that target audience is. So you might, I think early on, Zach had said he was probably going to skip massage therapists. And maybe there's some data he already has to indicate that they're not willing to pay for that. And that's fine. But are there other professions or other verticals that you can target and try to have those discussions with them and see if that's going to work? See if that's an initial traction channel that you can start to establish. And if it is, great. You can kind of move on to the next step in months 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 that we're going to lay out. But your focus at this point is trying to figure out who those people are and if you can establish like a recurring channel of them to have those discussions with. And if you can't, then maybe it's time to pivot to a different channel, a different vertical, or can the whole thing. Now, I probably wouldn't can it after trying to find one vertical. If you go to massage therapists and they say, no, we're just not interested. Okay, great. Go to dentists and then maybe pivot over to solo practitioner doctor's offices, or for example, or plastic surgeons or something along those lines. And each of those could be a 1 to 2 month effort, but you're trying to figure out, is there a place where you can get customers on a recurring basis, at least in the early days? And if you go through several of those iterations and you still can't find them, then that's the point where you need to reevaluate your position and decide whether or not to just cut your losses and move on.
So for months 3 and 4, you know, assuming that months 1 and 2 are successful and that you figure out a niche that you, you know, or a group that you're going to target, months 3 and 4, your KPI is the number of paying customers after you've had a direct discussion. This is very, very much not scalable, but what you're trying to do is learn objections. You're trying to overcome them via discussions. You're trying to close deals. It's still learning, but you're trying to start making the rubber meet the road and actually get some revenue. And what you might find is that you get through 3 and 4 and you can't get enough paying customers to make it worth your while. And you have to go back to and repeat months 1 and 2 and find a new group to target.
And the whole point of this particular piece of it, and I don't know, is paying customers is like the sole thing that you should focus on. Getting them into the app and getting them active and using the app, that's probably a much more important first step. Obviously, you want to keep them as paying customers and get them to convert from any sort of free trial that you put them in into a paying customer. But even if they don't, you're still going to learn from that. And the focus is really finding a certain number of people that you can put into it. And again, you can set those numbers yourself. You can base it on how many conversations you're actually having, because obviously if you only have 5 conversations a week, you're not going to get 10 customers a week. That's just simply not going to happen. But from that, you can kind of back that off and put people into the app and learn those objections, and you can overcome them by talking to them. A lot of times people will have a question that if they're on your website and they have a question in their mind, it draws doubts for them and they will not sign up because of that. But when you ask them, hey, would you like to sign up for an account right now? They'll say yes or no. And if they say no, you can ask, well, why not? What's stopping you? What is it that's holding you back here? And those are the things that you want to write down. Every single question that somebody asks, you want to write that question down. And that way you can go back to that. And over time, you'll get a base of, let's say, 20, 30, 50 people you've talked to. Start aggregating the number of questions that they asked and which questions they asked. And you can identify which of the questions were most prevalent, which ones the most people had, and use that in your marketing copy once you get to months 5 and 6, which is where you are trying to land paying customers or onboard people without having those direct discussions.
Yeah, so that's months 5 and 6, is moving out of the I'm talking to everyone, I'm doing demos for everyone, and am I able to start getting people to overcome their objections and sign up for a trial just purely based on a marketing website. And take these timelines with a grain of salt here. You know, we heard from Jordan Gall last week, and he was giving demos for 6 months, 8 months. So it wasn't just the 2 months we have here, or I guess we have 4 months, you know, 1 to 2 kind of finding the audience, and 3 to 4 is overcoming objections, and 5 and 6 is moving towards a more automated way. And their journey took longer. They have a more complex product, probably harder to explain, harder to demo. Appointment reminders tend to be fairly, you know, I think it's pretty easily understood by the prospects. So perhaps you'd have an easier time, or perhaps you'll have a tougher time getting to 5 and 6, because again, you know, your product isn't differentiated from others that they could find with a Google search. But that's the idea here, is this third step, this third piece is trying to move towards having more automated things in the flow. And maybe you don't remove demos altogether. Maybe you figure out, you have people self-select that if they're in the lower pricing tiers, then they sign right up. And if, you know, if they're going to pay you 3 figures a month, it's probably worth having a conversation with that person. And so you have a contact us link. Even if you show your pricing, you still have a, you know, some type of thing, how many appointments per month, and you know, immediately you get a ping and have an idea that it's worth, you know, you reaching out to them with a Calendly link to try to set up a conversation.
So with each of these sets of 2 months, months 1 and 2 is really about trying to get a certain number of customer discussions going. And then months 3 and 4 are putting people into the app through those direct discussions. And then 5 and 6 is getting those customers onboarded without having those direct sales discussions. So that's really just a logical progression. And as Rob pointed out, like, your timeline may vary quite a lot. It could be closer to a year, or it could be closer to 2 months. It depends on how complicated your app is, how far along it is, how many people you're able to have those conversations with early on, how quickly you get traction. And it also depends a lot on what your schedule is. If you're working on it full time, you're going to be able to move faster. If you're working on it on the nights and weekends, you're probably not going to be able to schedule 25 calls during a week. It's just not going to happen because you have a full-time job and you've got other responsibilities. So during the work week is going to be very difficult for you. But all of this is really just establishing this logical progression so that you can determine whether or not this idea that you have, or the product and the MVP that you've put together, is going to go anywhere, so that you're not wasting too much time trying to make something work that's simply not going to for you. And I think that's another key distinction that we've made on this podcast before, which is that even though something could be a great idea and it is reasonably well executed, it may not be the right idea for you. If it's not something you're passionate about or not, you don't want to do, or you're just not interested in it, you're not going to do it as well as if it was something that you were extremely interested in and extremely motivated to do. You're going to kind of push things off and not be as motivated to move people forward in the sales funnel and do the website and the coding and everything else. And it's going to be harder for you. And maybe it's just not the right fit. Maybe some other product would be a better fit. But again, these are all things that you need to evaluate as you're going through this process.
We call that in the biz product founder fit. And it's, as you said, is the product a good fit for you, for your personality, for what you want to do, for the customers you want to work with, for the features you want to build? And it's a bit of an amorphous concept and it's hard to know up front. But, you know, what's nice is that Zach said right off the bat, I don't think I want to work with massage therapists. And it's like, all right, good. It's a good thing to know that, you know, don't go after that market because you're probably going to find out that you're not, you know, even if you found success, you're not going to enjoy it. And you're not going to stick with it for the long term.
I think that's an interesting side conversation to kind of have about, you know, whether or not, even if that would work, do you want to do it? And I think in some cases, the answer to that is probably not. You know, there's certainly groups of people that I would probably not want to work with or probably would not enjoy. And everybody has their own, you know, either biases or people that they know or in certain industries that are like, oh, I just don't want to deal with any of that stuff. And again, it may work out. It's just like marketing tactics. There may be some things that you're really comfortable doing and, you know, the next person may not be comfortable with that at all.
Yeah, there was an app I almost acquired, and I'm trying to think if it was, it may have been after Hittail, and it was when I was, or Hittail was, I still owned it, but it was, you know, it had grown to where I thought it was going to grow, and I was kind of looking at other avenues. It was before Drip, and I looked at acquiring a bunch of different apps, and one of them was going to put me, you know, marketing to and having a customer base of like designers and UX and usability folks, and you know, I had no reach into that market. Like, obviously, I have an understanding of what they do, but I am not in that target market. And it was Ruben Gomez from BitSketch who asked me, you know, is this, you're basically kind of doing a market pivot by going from a, you know, SEO tool, which is at least marketing technology, into something that goes after a completely different audience. And is that something that you want to do for the next 3, 4, 5 years? And frankly, I have no qualms with, you know, working with designers and UX people. And I think it would have been an interesting adventure, but it would have been a huge learning experience for me. And I thought, you know, if I do this, I'm going to have an uphill battle to learn a whole new space and to learn like what are all the sites where people hang out? What are the blogs where I already know this from MarTech? And that is one of the reasons that I wound up doing Drip, because it's not the same as an SEO keyword tool, but it is another marketing SaaS. And I already knew so much about the space because of my heavy involvement and evaluation of tools for my own personal use. It was just a different thing. So I think I still would have been successful. It probably would have taken longer had I done that. I would have had to educate myself about a market, make myself a name in that market, which, you know, I really, really don't have. And so it's just something to think about as you go through your ideas.
I think one of the last questions that Zach had come up with was, you know, should I spend more money on AdWords or should I just abandon that and go do something else? And I think, you know, Rob, you're probably in agreement with me on this one, but AdWords is probably not the way you want to go, especially if you don't have a lot of money to kind of throw into this, because you're going to spend money trying to learn. And it's not that spending money to learn is a bad thing, but you're going to probably spend much more money than you would if you had some customer discussions first and you waited until months 3 or 4 to start kind of pumping up the sales funnel a little bit after you've gotten some of the terminology a little bit, you've narrowed down the market a little bit. If you're just throwing money out there to try and figure out where the market is, it's going to be very expensive to do that.
Yeah. The tough part is since the audience is brick and mortar, it's going to be expensive and hard to find them. There are tools where everybody's online and they're always signing up for new things and you can do the curiosity play and get them to sign up and you have a low price point and you could test an idea with, you know, with ads, landing pages and kind of more broader scope stuff if you had the money to do it. I don't see an avenue to do that here. So, you know, just by nature of the potential audiences that we've, you know, we can come up with, I think you're right. I'm in agreement that AdWords is probably not where you're going to get a bunch of learning at this point. Maybe you could run AdWords just enough to get that trickle of calls that you want And again, it's going to be expensive to get that trickle going. But if you have no other avenues, yeah, maybe it is AdWords or it's Facebook ads, you know, it's some type of paid acquisition. But if you can pay $10, $20 to find someone to get on the phone with you who has some inbound interest, that's interesting. But you could just as easily do some cold outbound email or cold phone calls and perhaps get the same result with less money, but more time.
And that's really what this is all about, is, you know, kind of striking that balance between how much money you have available and how much time you have available. If you have more time than money, don't do paid ads. Have those customer discussions. Learn who it is that you need to target. If you have a lot more money than time, spend it on AdWords and learn who. But it's going to be dramatically more expensive without having those customer discussions to guide you.
So if you got value out of today's show, we would really appreciate a 5-star review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you partake of this glorious audio adventure. You don't even have to write a sentence saying how cool we are. You can just hit the 5-star button, and we really appreciate it. It helps people find our podcast, gives us some motivation to keep going. And if you have a question for us, you can call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot. It's used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.